Hello, my name is Jeremy Melder, and I'm the presenter from Beaming Green. Before we start, I would like to acknowledge that this podcast is being held on the traditional lands of the Bundjalung people and pay our respects to elders both past, present and emerging. The Beaming Green Podcast is a podcast that will help you take out some of the stress and confusion about how to live your life more sustainably. We do this by introducing you to inspiring people with first-hand experience and expertise who cover aspects of sustainability from human interest to environmental perspectives, helping you to thrive and enhance your life and the lives of your friends and family. Today, I'm really excited to be speaking with Janine Barron, who created her first eco product in 1998. Over the next 23 years, she launched over 33 zero-waste products. In 2000, she first used the phrase, "Change the world one purchase at a time," to express her brand activism, a phrase that has been adopted by many industries since then. Now, 2.5 decades later, and based in the UK, Janine is on a mission to change business for generations to come by mentoring a new generation of product makers and climate-conscious business owners. Please join me in welcoming Janine to Beaming Green. Well, hello, Janine. It seems like a long time ago that we have touched or crossed paths. It's probably nearly a year ago, I think. So welcome to Beaming Green.
Thank you, Jeremy. It's great to be here. It's good morning from me and it's good night for you, isn't it? 9 hours difference at the moment as I'm speaking from the UK.
It is, it is. And how is everything going in the UK with your lockdown and so on? Have
well,
you sort of got out of all
extraordinary, yeah, extraordinary moment to share with you that I had yesterday. I got to go to London, which was a big deal because we've only just been able to travel. I'm currently living in a beautiful village called Maiden Bradley, 2 hours drive from London. And as I arrived in London at Paddington train station, and anyone who's been there knows how busy that train station is. Mm. I would say there was about a dozen people in the main station. Then I got on the tube. There was three of us on a London tube. I went to Charing Cross. I got out at Charing Cross. Three of us got out. The other two people were in carriages, so they disappeared. And there I was in a London tube at 11 a.m. by myself. I took photos for my dear Facebook friends. I was literally the only people, you know, those escalators on a London tube that go, you know, they're really tall. I was the only person on it. And then I got out at Trafalgar Square and I stood there and I thought, this is a moment. This is a moment that will not happen very often.
Absolutely. You must have felt like it was in a bit of a ghost town, did you?
It was like, some people describe it as being on a film set. I just felt very grateful to have that moment. I thought London will never be this quiet again, never be this. I wasn't coughing or blowing my nose, which you normally do constantly in London. So the pollution's better, lots of benefits. But we're just coming out of a lockdown. It's a 2-month phased process and we've been 5 months at home. Yes.
Oh, and how's that been for you mentally and physically and, you know, all things in running your business and so on?
Yeah, look, always trying to see the positive. We've been very blessed. We're in a very small village of only 300 people. It's a tight community. We all look after each other.
Yeah.
And so I've been in probably one of the best environments that I could be in. Missed family terribly. We did move from Australia to be with family and we haven't been able to. So we're very, very grateful for the technology that allows us to stay in touch with people. So, yeah, lots of long country walks, lots of writing, building a business online, making the best of the situation we're in.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I wanted to say thanks very much and I appreciate your time today because I know you've got to rush off to another meeting. Now, Janine, you're in the business of helping ecopreneurs or business owners who want to have an environmental and social impact on their bottom line business strategies. But before we go ahead, I guess it would be great if you could share with our listeners, you know, a little bit of background and what led you down this path to where you are now, you know?
Yeah, sure. It's an interesting time to be asked that question because I just made a decision recently to write my story. I've often referred to myself as an ecopreneurial activist because I felt like business was not a likely profession for someone who was basically an activist for 10 years, primarily a volunteer activist in the area of human rights. And it all began one day back in when I was 17 in a politics tutorial at Macquarie University where I was asked to do a book review. And I chose the thinnest book because I was terrified and thinking of leaving university. And that book was a book called Black Death, White Hands by Paul Wilson. And there I was, a 17-year-old white woman from the western suburbs of Sydney, one of the last Whitlam people to attend a university, thinking of leaving because it was a difficult culture. And I'm reading a book about 3 years earlier in only 1981 when the Queensland government had forcibly removed and burnt down the town of Mapoon and moved the inhabitants north. And my life changed that very weekend. It wasn't a gradual change. I went from being a sheltered 17-year-old thinking about finishing my HSC and what dress to wear to the formal to lifting the lid and seeing the world in a completely different way, and I became an activist overnight. I was devastated. I was awakened. And I had an awareness that would totally guide the rest of my life. So after 10 years of activism, which is a whole different story in itself, that took me all over the world to the United Nations, to the Sami land in Norway, amazing adventures, I sat there with a baby in my arms in sometime at about 29 years of age and decided that the baby industry, which was full of disposables and plastic, was horrifying and I was going to change it. That was back in 1998, and I set out and I did.
So what did you do? What did you do to revolutionise the baby industry?
Well, it's interesting. I've always had this innate, that activist in me always had this innate knowing that what was right and wrong. So I could see that throwing things away was absurd and that we had to revitalise cloth nappies. A couple of dear friends, Natalie and Simone, bought me some cloth nappies at Bangalore Market in northern New South Wales. And that was a moment I thought, this is what we need. So I set off and I created Australia's first organic baby store with only one organic baby product. But it began this this journey where I would say organic cotton and people would say to me, but isn't cotton organic? It's natural. And you've got to remember, we all know this information now, but you've got to go back to 2000 where none of us knew this. And I was there trying to tell everyone, no, do you know how many chemicals are in a standard T-shirt that's made from standard organic cotton? And then I traced the supply chain back to primarily India and Bangladesh, which is still the center of the clothing industry of the world. Child labor, kids playing in chemical drums while their kids are playing on in the chemical drums in farms that are producing cotton with toxic chemicals. And when I traced that supply chain, which seemed to me the most natural thing in the world to do, I didn't realize at the time it was a kind of a radical business idea. In all honesty, I was just doing what felt right. And I just thought, this is wrong. And if we can't be in a first world country buying products made in a third world country, knowing what's happening to the people in that supply chain. So even the language supply chain, I didn't know at the time. I just was kind of searching back. And that grew slowly and gradually from my office. And literally the first, a shelf that didn't even stand up properly. It was rickety. Some other mums would come to my house and buy some nappies. And then on the 1st of July 2000, I always say I share a birthday with GST. I decided to go formal and think I've got this is a business. So I held an open day at my house and I thought, well, I'll see what happens. And we made $2,000 that day in my garage. And I thought, yeah, I'm onto something here.
Yeah. And now you've sold that business, is that right? You've managed.
I did.
You started off with one product. I just want to know how many products did you actually end up with before you sold?
Oh, gazillions.
Yeah.
Look, I personally created, I've worked out 33 products that I actually designed and launched into the world under my own brand name. But we sold a lot of other people's products as well. We really became a zero waste hub before that term existed. Someone came and interviewed me once in 2007, I think it was. It's still on YouTube somewhere. They asked me what was sustainable about our business. And again, think back then, I didn't even know what sustainability was.
Yeah.
I said, oh, recycling, supply chains. Oh, yeah, we do all that. Like, we just were always ahead of our time.
Yeah.
So the business we're talking about is Nature's Child, which was a business I did sell in 2018. But it was one of four businesses I had. There's other business stories there.
Yeah.
And what they all have in common is I realize I'm a pioneer. So these days, yeah, I call myself an eco-business pioneer.
Just to clarify, there's an eco-business pioneer, but you're also an eco-business coach. Is that right? Is that what?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I guess my history is being pioneering. And so in terms of people wanting to work with me, I'm very good at the start of something. I really embrace radical ideas and I don't shy away from them.
Yeah.
But what I do now is, well, sometime around 10 years ago, so people started ringing me up for advice. And I found that I really enjoyed giving that advice and helping people to create things. So I formally became an eco-business coach 2 years ago. And another little funny moment, back in 2018, I was trying to convince people that while I traveled around the world celebrating, selling my company and visiting my family, that we should work on Zoom. And people were struggling with that. And then along came March 2020 and I was like, yes, once again, I'm a pioneer ahead of my time.
Good on you. Good on you. So you've sold the business. You've gone to the UK, which is where your husband is originally, or no, his family are from as well.
Correct.
And you're now doing an eco coaching business. And look, I'm really proud to say to our listeners that you have coached me. In the starting of Beaming Green. And look, you know,
look at you.
6 months, 6 or 7 months on, and 2,500 followers. So that's something I'm very grateful for, Janine, for you helping me. So I want to acknowledge you for, you know, your guidance there. But, you know, in terms of people that are looking to start up an eco business, because I think really, if anything, you know, COVID may have even, people might have thought, well, what can I do locally in a supply chain that is local so that, you know, if another situation like COVID came up, then I could sustain the local community around, you know. That's just one example I'm using. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, things have progressed a lot since the days when we were wondering what was happening in India and we were getting products made there. And you're absolutely right to mention that local is best. So I guess there's a few different types of people I work with. Sometimes I still do work internationally with people with bigger supply chains because these people are for the first time ever wanting to change. You've got people like Unilever and McDonald's advertising for the, wish I could find it for you actually. It was something, the McDonald's ad recently was something like climate and planet manager. Like, I mean, this is what's happening in the corporate world internationally. It's quite fascinating. And you can't get people like that to change to local sources too quickly.
No way.
But it is possible. It is possible. And what we need is governments, of course, to set the targets and actually make these things enshrined in law. Then the big corporations will act.
Yeah.
So there's some amazingly positive stuff that a lot of people aren't aware of that is happening at the corporate level. And I do have a tiny finger in that pie. But my favorite is community. And so you're absolutely right to mention locally based products. So the thing I have about products as a product mentor, I say people are going to keep buying stuff.
Yeah.
They just are. So if stuff has to exist in the world, let's look at what that stuff is, where it comes from, what it's made from, and, of course, what happens to it at the end of its life. Preferably it disintegrates into back into the earth. That is like the ultimate goal. And, you know, it used to be called cradle to grave. That was the term we used to use. Triple bottom line, quadruple bottom line, all these terminology can express that. But the bottom line is, where does it come from? Where does it end up?
Yeah.
And so I love to work with people who have that as part of their philosophy, as well as making an incredibly successful, financially successful business.
Yeah, yeah. And so what are the key ingredients that you believe that you bring to the table in terms of, you know, coaching someone?
Yeah, sure. So the key ingredient would be my assumption about the ethics of what we're about to discuss. So it's never compromised. It's part of the story. We don't have to go, you don't have to sit with me and think, How do I do that ethically? It's absolutely integral to the process. So that's why people would probably choose me.
Yeah.
But there's another side to business, which is you need to understand all the components. You need to understand, usually it's mindset and having a massive vision and really understanding clearly about where you want to go. And then once you start on the journey, there's all the components of if it's a product, it could involve having intellectual property. And a lot of people just don't know how to do that. Then we move on to, you know, packaging, ingredients, depending what the product is. If it's a digital product, then there's just a world out there of people who will take your money and take you down a rabbit hole. So I love to be very protective of, you know, if anyone tells me they're about to do a website, I go, oh, talk to me first. I love to save people money. I love to help them fulfill their dreams. And in all honesty, once we start going through the components, that's just a very visceral, physical process. It's usually the mindset and the healing journey, the personal development journey that is the most powerful. Yes. And I think that's probably another key ingredient I bring to the table.
I've got to say, I agree with that. You know, like I felt very much when we were talking and when I was doing the course with you, that you were reflecting back things in a way to make me look at things differently. And I found that beneficial because it actually made me look at something from a different angle so that I am able to, you know, address my audiences, which I'm trying to do now with Beaming Green, how to market it better. So I think you've definitely added, you know, some depth to what I was doing. I guess the question I've got is, do you prefer to work with people that are just a startup, or do you prefer to work with bigger companies, or are you okay with both?
Yeah, I do a bit of both. So I usually just really tune in intuitively to see if it's the right pathway and the right journey to take with someone.
Yep.
I never take on a client for client's sake. I really check in. We usually speak for an hour or two before there's any business or money exchanged, and we just really see if we're well aligned. It's so important. I've started and sold four companies. I'm 55. I've been through menopause. I'm not mucking around anymore.
You're serious, are you?
You know, it's like, look, intuition and strategy have equal value.
Yeah.
We have to align. You know, I want you to succeed and have your vision, because people who go on this journey, they want impact in the world. And when we don't make the impact that we set out to get, we feel deflated, and that's where the personal development journey comes in. I'm not good enough. Oh, maybe I can't do it. Oh, I don't have enough money. All these kind of, you know, things creep in, and I love to work with people energetically around that.
Yeah. Now, I was looking at your website and you were talking about some of the pitfalls that people find themselves in. Can you talk us through some of those things that are gotchas in a person's preparation for going into business, or, you know, moving to another dimension in business?
Yeah, okay, good one. So there's three stages, roughly, I describe it as. The first, like you say, a startup is where you're building something. And in that building phase, a lot of decisions will be made around whether you continue, whether it's really your passion, whether maybe this is just getting you on a path that will take you somewhere else. This is not actually the ultimate path. Maybe you're someone else. So the building phase is really, really important. I call it building. You can call it a startup, but it's just that beginning, the beginning of something.
Yep.
And then there's when you have kind of proven that, you know, this is viable and it excites you, then there's a whole nother stage which we would move into, which is, you know, really growing. And growing is full of pain, and, you know, this is where we raise money, we make mistakes, we, you know, it's like you get really, really challenged, like, are you sure this is what you want? But also it's where a lot of the success happens. And then the final stage is scaling. So it's for me, it's understanding where a person is at when I meet them.
Yeah.
I really check in, are they, you know, so I've just worked with someone for 6 months and we did amazing work, but I kind of could tell around the 4 month mark, they just didn't have what it took. They weren't passionate enough. They weren't excited enough. And I just had to be honest with them. And we made great music together, but it was time to go.
And I think that you've hit the nail on the head there, because I think, you know, some of us have ideas And I've been there as well, you know, with lots of ideas and think, oh, you know, I can have a go at this. But really, you've got to have your heart and soul into what you're doing. If you don't, then you're pretty much going to struggle, aren't you?
Yeah, especially if you're looking at a brand or something regular like a podcast that you're doing, you know, you're going to have to dig deep some days to really get there.
Yeah.
But I think the best advice I can give to anyone listening that thinks they have an idea is I want to say two things. One, I started a business in 1998 on a parenting allowance with $20. That's a whole story in itself. Do not feel limited by your current circumstances. If you have an idea that is igniting your soul and you think it has legs, you'd be amazed how the universe will back you if you just take action, which leads me to my next point. Take action. Do not sit there thinking about what you might be doing, what you could do, whether it's right, what if it doesn't work out. Just start.
Yeah.
Just absolutely start. In the action is where all the revelations unfold. So you might do this podcast for 6 months and realize, oh, it wasn't about the podcast in the end. It was about the path it took me on, and I met this person, and from that I ended up on a different path.
Mm.
But if you hadn't done the podcast for 6 months, so I'm just working with someone at the moment. She's been turning up on LinkedIn every day, creating a video. And when we started working together, it was basically me saying, well, what are you doing with that? She's like, I don't know. I just turn up every day. But from that, we developed a strategy that could never have unfolded so successfully if she hadn't just started turning up. She wasn't earning money. She just turned up every single day.
Mm.
And that led to, that action led to ultimately where she was meant to go. So wherever you are right now, whatever your resources, whatever your situation, if you've got a dream, just take the first step. Follow the breadcrumbs, as my mentor says to me, just follow the breadcrumbs.
Yeah, yeah, just follow that. You know, that those steps forward, and I totally echo those because I think I've done that. And it's it's really quite interesting, Janine, because even my experience over the last couple of weeks, I've been listening to a series of interviews, and I've just been reaching out to people that have been interviewed on there, and I've had such fortunate success with those people wanting to talk more because, you know, sustainability, the environment is so important. If it's not important in our lives now, I don't know what is, because I tell you what, there's so much that we need to do pronto, you know, and we can't act soon enough in doing this. And I think what you're doing is, you know, trying to get help people who are as passionate about doing something sustainably do it well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm at such a natural place to be in this kind of support education role with people.
Yeah.
With all my experience. But in all, you know, I thought 20 years ago by now the whole planet would be zero waste. I was obviously idealistic. So when you say it's important, that is an understatement. This is
absolutely.
Has to be the only way we operate. It's literally, this is it.
Yeah.
This is our chance.
If people have got staff and they want to learn how to manage stuff, is that something that you can help with as well in terms of your business, your training?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. People, it's interesting. I was with a team yesterday and, you know, the best leaders actually go into a support role for their staff. But most business owners are deluded that they have to, and I used to be in this trap, that I had to be the leader. I had to always be the one to set the example. So, yeah, it's a human journey supporting staff. And I love, I've made so many mistakes in that area that, I learned on the job, that's for sure.
Mm.
But, yes, I love to work with people who have teams. That's really exciting because it means there's more brains and more action in the pot.
Yeah. Now, I remember one of my colleagues or my boss actually was telling me in my previous corporate roles, saying to me that, you know, the idea about your role is to be able to delegate enough so that you make yourself redundant. What do you think? Is that accurate?
Yeah, I just recently was reflecting how I really should have done that better in my last company. I think you've nailed it. You got me to go quiet then. I was like, yeah, you're right, Jeremy.
And I think, you know, if you're running your own business, it is so easy to be in the business and not removed from the business. And I think that's one of the values that you as a coach bring, because you're actually getting people to get the helicopter view of their business and how they can actually, you know, possibly remove themselves a little bit from the day-to-day work and get other people that, you know, I think there's a lot of people that are willing to step up and learn more if we let go of the controls a little bit more.
Yeah, look, and I'm not just saying this because I'm a coach myself, and I refer to myself more as a mentor than a coach, but I do play both roles. But early on in my business, I was very fortunate where we got accepted into a women in business mentoring program.
Yep.
That was 1998. And I was shown very early on the value of a mentor. And I always had mentors except for I had a really rough patch in business that went for about 5 years. And funnily enough, I didn't have a mentor in that time. I don't know what I was thinking. So when I left, and then I had a mentor the last 5-6 years, like just full time. You always have a mentor, always. So when I left the last company, the very first thing I did was I got a mentor before anything else.
Mm.
The second thing I got was an accountant, and the third thing I got was a VA. So I think anyone who doesn't have some kind of mentor or coach, some kind of sounding board, it's a hard path to walk. You cannot do it all alone.
No, I agree with that. I think it's really important to have your board of directors, because, you know, if you're running a solo type of business, you need people to talk to that can just give you some direction and some of their own wisdom, you know?
Yeah, and I'm not talking about ringing someone occasionally, because a few people might be thinking, oh, yeah, I ring so-and-so when I need to. It's like, no, you need to set up a formal arrangement, even if it's with a friend, and say, look, can we meet every Tuesday morning for a cuppa, yeah, and would you just be a sounding board for me? There's a lot of people with experience that would happily do that.
Mm.
The preferable stage is to go into a formal relationship, because when you put money on the table, someone yesterday said described it as having skin in the game. I'll have to go and research the origin of that term. But once you invest in something, and I think everyone will recognize this, it's a whole different experience and relationship you have with someone. You're really stating to the world and to yourself, this is a priority and this is important.
Yeah.
So for me, I think mentor's the first person on your team when you start a business.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I definitely echo those thoughts. The other thing I was wanting to know is, and I think this is a really good idea, that you've started up another offering called a B Experience for...
Mm.
And I think that's so important. Do you want to talk about the B Experience?
Yeah, thank you. So the B Experience, very importantly, is not a course and is not a program. I was very, very clear. I've been on two journeys, one very intuitive spiritual journey and one very in the world business journey. And I've been on my own personal journey of how to marry the two.
Yeah.
And the B Experience is the result, where it's a women-only space at the moment. And what we do is we do strategy and intuition in equal portions. And the results already are just extraordinary. So I talk about a framework.
Yeah.
I call it the heart method. So you may remember, Jeremy,
I
that
do
we
remember
did the hat method.
On my wall.
But we didn't. So the hat method, we used to wear our hats when we came along, and we talk about habits, action and timelines.
Yeah.
But I realized there was two very, very important things missing. And I was so delighted one day to realize that the result was the spelling of the word heart.
Yeah.
So the E we bring in is energy and environment. And the R, which is a powerful one, is about receiving. And because what I find is a lot of people who want to move into this space of sustainability and are very empathic people, they may have an activist background like myself, or they may have worked in the community sector, which means they're used to giving, yeah, giving, giving.
Yeah.
And in business, you have to know how to receive. The giving comes naturally, but the receiving. So sometimes I get work with people who have incredible business ideas, but they're not sure how to charge properly or to bring the money in as well as you need to make it sustainable, personally sustainable.
Yeah.
So the R is quite beautiful. And then I realized, I've just turned the hat method into the heart method. So it's very powerful. The results we're getting already are quite extraordinary. It allows people to move either fast or slow, which is why I call it a framework.
Yeah.
because I think there's so much out there in the online world. Get seven figures now.
Yeah.
Have a business in 6 weeks. Yeah. It's just like, I think it just exhausts people.
Yeah.
I'd say I'm the antidote to that.
Yeah.
And women come along and we breathe and we just, and the progress is so beautiful. It's magical.
And what type of age groups have you been finding are people that are coming to you with this, with wanting to be?
What a great question. 35 to 55.
Okay. So would they be post having children, or?
They either have young children at the moment. So there's that life balance struggle.
Yeah.
And then we have people whose children have left home, but then, you know, you're dealing with menopause and career change and, you know, divorce and relationship change and all the stuff that happens in your 40s and 50s, health issues. And yet, you know, you want to make your mark. People who have left corporate, actually, I would say most people have been in corporate and left.
Yeah.
So we have a mix, actually, of sort of ground up community and corporate. Yeah, good question. I hadn't reflected on that before.
Yeah, because I was just thinking, you know, there's a lot of I've talked to a few women in that have either just, you know, because they've left the workforce to have children, they've spent a bit of time, but they've still got a lot of experience. And but it's like, you know, what have you been doing for the last 8 years or whatever it is if they want to get a job? So they go, well, what can I do to get it to do something meaningful that I'm passionate about? And they, in their discussion, they have this certain element of fear about, you know, stepping into the world again. And I think this what you're offering is almost like a work group of people that you can talk about these issues and how you can actually, you know, overcome them, you know, as a group possibly.
You know, you nailed it there. Thank you. I might have to use that description. Thank you, Jeremy. It's interesting. I had someone recently say to me, describe me as multilingual. She says, Janine speaks eco and sustainability, but she also speaks woo-woo, which I take that as a compliment. So you're right. I would say the Be Experience is a container of support where we can be vulnerable and pissed off, but we'll also get the job done.
Yeah.
So it's a kind of a really real space. Like I say, I'm the antidote to, you know, you turn up on some of these online courses and they're like, right, if you're not prepared to put in the work, it's not going to happen. Okay, you got to work hard. And I'm like, no, there's no working hard.
Work smart.
That's an old paradigm. That is a masculine, mechanistic old paradigm. We are here to regenerate and live authentically on this planet, which means look at nature. There's four seasons. There's a natural time to rest. There's a natural time to grow. It's about time we just look to the garden and see the answers right in front of us about how to be, and it is not to work long, hard hours. That is nonsense. That you won't get that with me.
Yeah, that's a good point that you're making there, because, you know, it's really one of my big takeouts from doing this podcast I've got to share is that, you know, people that I've interviewed, majority of them talk about observation and listening before taking any action, because there's so much, I think, that is in the subtleties of life that we are missing because we're so busy. You know, I put up a post today about being on the merry-go-round, you know, because we just get so busy looking after family, looking after, you know, work and children and all those things that we forget that there's other things that are more important, like yourself and your relationship with yourself and other people, you know.
And look, you know, we've all had that experience where, you know, suddenly it's dark, you're working in the garden and it suddenly got dark, you didn't realise, or you're writing, or you worked a 14-hour day but it was enjoyable.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying it's not okay to do those things.
No.
If you get lost in the moment and you're on a roll, then that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Because the work has to be put in, but I just don't want people kind of exhausted, having another coffee, going, I have to do this, I should do this, because there's a beauty that happens when we actually go with our rhythm.
No, I agree.
And this is what's unusual about the way I support people as well, is I'm like, let's just find your rhythm and trust. You will absolutely get the result you want. It may not be in the time frame you wanted initially, but it's like when we work with the energy, we get the result in a much more profound, sustainable way.
Okay. Now, I'm very mindful of your time, Janine, and I was wondering if you would give us a little bit of a takeout for what are the three things that people would probably need to think about before they contact you even?
Well, funnily enough, the first thing is you don't have to think about too much. If you energetically are feeling a connection right now, just reach out. Mm. I always say conversations cost nothing.
Yeah.
So it's like take action, as I said earlier, is the most important thing. So if you're like, I don't have a fully formed idea, but I have a sense of something, that is a great time to call and talk it through. Mm. So actually, I'd say you don't need anything to have a conversation. Just trust the energy you're feeling and make that call. And the best place, thank you for asking, is probably to go to my website. It has all the ways to contact me.
Yep, and what is that website
only 9
called?
Hours. So it's theproductmentor.com.au.
Yep.
Okay. Always confuses the British, the .au, but hey.
Hey, you're Australian. Come on.
It's hilarious. Product Mentor.
The Product Mentor, and they can just book an appointment with you, which is free, which I've done. I did that initially. We had a nice chat and then we went from there, didn't we? It was quite simple.
Absolutely. And sometimes we have a lovely chat. I always say to people, you're going to go away with some kind of gold from just one conversation with me. There's no doubt. It doesn't mean we have to work together. It's not a sales call. Trust me. I hope you've learned that from the way I've spoken.
Yeah.
I just don't do that. I'm looking for alignment. I want to support people who want to make impact in the world. And wherever you are right now, whatever stage you're at with your idea, whether it's fully formed or just a seed or a sense of something, we can make beautiful magic for you. And if I can make a small difference to your life, then it would be my honor.
Yeah, look, you have definitely worked from a place of integrity. And there's no agenda, you know, apart from an agenda of wanting to help the person get to where they want to get to. And, you know, you do it really well. So, Janine, I want to thank you so much for being on Beaming Green. You've got 1 minute before you have to get to your next appointment. But, you know, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Jeremy. It's been an honour to be interviewed by you on Beaming Green. And I'm so thrilled with your success and I'm thoroughly enjoying all your episodes.
Thank you. Cheers. Thank you for listening to this episode of Beaming Green. Now, if you got something out of this episode, we'd love to hear what your biggest takeaway was. There are a number of ways you can do this. You can leave a review on Apple Podcasts, or if you have a Facebook, Instagram, or LinkedIn social media page, you can leave a review there. Now, don't forget to tag us so we can thank you personally. Lastly, go to beaminggreen.com and subscribe to our newsletter and receive a free How to Be Green guide. At Beaming Green, we are committed to providing you with a thought-provoking and insightful program that inspires you to live your life in accordance with your true nature and purpose. We do this by sharing stories from people that are walking their talk and are committed to living their lives sustainably with their mind, body, and soul, so you can share this with your friends and family and leave the planet in a better place. The music for this podcast was created by Dave Weir.